Well, we're going to talk about fear tonight. You know, in the past we've talked about the fact that we shouldn't be afraid of men, that we need to have boldness and courage and those kinds of things. And certainly that's true. Don't want to take anything away from any of that. But the old saying, a little fear is a healthy thing, is pretty true. There are some things that should cause us some fear. The problem that we have is that most of the time we have the wrong fears. I decided to look it up because I was curious about it, and I found 8 pages of fears that people have. A list, 8 pages long of the fears that people have. Different phobias, they're often called. The Greek word for fear being phobos, or phobos. All of these things, and some of them are pretty outrageous when you think about it. And yet, probably, if we were honest, some of us probably have some fears about some things that when we really think about it, we shouldn't be afraid of. And yet, sometimes we are. Ablutophobia, for example, is the fear of washing or bathing. I hope we don't have that fear. That could be a pretty smelly fear to have. Allodoxophobia is a fear of opinions. Ever been afraid of someone's opinions? Anaglophobia is a fear of looking up. That seems a strange thing to be afraid of. I can imagine up in high places being afraid of looking down. I've been there before. But afraid of looking up. Well, what's up there that's so scary? I don't know. But some people have a fear of that. You'll never guess this one. Arachnophobia. I bet you don't know what that is. That's a fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. Now, I've eaten a peanut butter sandwich and had peanut butter stick to the roof of my mouth, and it can be pretty troublesome to get that off of there once it gets stuck up there. But I've never really been afraid that that was going to hurt me in some way. Allophobia is a fear of flutes, and orophobia is a fear of gold. Autophobia is a fear of one's self. You ever scare yourself? If so, maybe you suffer from autophobia. Now, this certainly isn't even all of the A's. We don't have time to read all of them. If you're interested, I'll give you a copy of the list to look at some of these things. But it is amazing, isn't it, some of the things that we're afraid of? Some people are afraid of books. They call that bibliophobia. Some people are afraid of money. That's called chromatophobia. Some people are afraid of colors. Let's see, everybody out there, some of you aren't wearing any colorful outfits. Are you afraid of colors? That's chromophobia. Some people are afraid of clocks. Some people are afraid of chopsticks. One that's more common is the fear of clowns. A lot of little children especially are afraid of clowns. But some adults even never got over that fear of the clown or someone wearing a mask like that. And that's coulrophobia. Some people are afraid of sitting. That's cathesophobia. I guess none of you are, or else you overcame your fear anyway because you're sitting. Some people are afraid of church. They call that ecclesiophobia. A more reasonable fear is ephebiphobia, which is a fear of teenagers. They can be pretty frightening. So I can understand that fear. But then there's geliophobia, which is a fear of laughter. I've never known of anybody dying from laughter, but I suppose it's a possibility. There's a fear of hair, chiasophobia. We'll go on and on. There's a whole list here. Just one more. There's a fear of long words. It's the longest name of them all. It's hippopotamonstrosequipedaliophobia. If I can even pronounce that one. Seems odd that the name for the fear of long words is a really long word. But before some of you start suffering from homilophobia, which is a fear of sermons, I'll move on. You know, there are a million things in this world that people could be afraid of. Some of those fears are not necessarily irrational in and of themselves. Some people are afraid of fire. Fire is a dangerous thing. It needs to be treated with respect and a certain level of fear. The problem with phobias is that people become irrational in their fear of that thing. They become so scared of it that they can't think straight, that they can't behave in a calm and reasonable manner at all. Or someone might see a fire and start running around screaming at the top of their lungs and wind up running into the fire instead of getting out of the area where the fire is. That would be the wrong reaction, wouldn't it? That wouldn't help. That wouldn't solve the problem. Some people suffer, I suppose, from what could be called theophobia, which is a fear of God. They suffer from an irrational fear of God. The Bible teaches us that we should be afraid. We should be very afraid of God, but not in the sense of a phobia, not in the sense of an irrational fear that would lead us to do things that would be unrealistic or unreasonable. That's the problem. Some people, they're so afraid of God that they're afraid to come in the church building. Knew one fellow, he said, I'm afraid to come in the church building because I'm afraid if I stepped in the church building, God would strike me dead. Why would He strike you dead for stepping in the church building? He's probably more angry because you're not in the church building when you ought to be. See? He's not thinking clearly. He's got it backwards. God's not going to strike you dead for doing the right thing. But that's the problem that people have when they're suffering from a phobia. They're not thinking clearly. So when the Bible tells us to fear God, it doesn't teach us that we ought to run around screaming and going crazy like a chicken with our heads cut off. That's not the kind of thing that the Bible teaches us. It does teach us that we should have a fear, a respect, and a reverence for God. And in the process of that, it's going to cause us, instead of doing the wrong thing, to actually do the right thing. There are various different motivations that are available to us. One of those basic motivations, of course, is fear. We're motivated by fear. When we're afraid, we're going to be motivated in one way or another. We may not be motivated to do the right thing, but we will be motivated. Fear, however, is not the best motivator, but it is a motivator. And it's one that the Bible teaches is a valid motivator. I hope that all of us can move beyond being motivated simply by fear. Hadiophobia, the fear of hell, is something that drives many Christians. The only reason that they come to church, the only reason that they pray to God or ever study the Word of God is because they're afraid of hell. Others may be afraid of missing out on heaven, and so they continue to do those things that they think God wants them to do because they don't want to miss out on heaven. And that brings us to our scripture for the week, this week. In Hebrews, you have it there on your page if you have your page in front of you. Hebrews chapter 4. In verse number 1. Now, the word fear is used 1,000 times in the Bible, or a form of it, afraid. I'm rounding that. It's not quite 1,000, but it's used many, many times. Most of that time, it said, don't be afraid, or be not afraid, or do not fear. But you know, the Bible does tell us there are some things that we should be afraid of. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 1 is one of those things. I promised you we were going to talk about one of the let verses. Let us therefore fear. Now we've talked in the past weeks about having courage and boldness and not being afraid. But I want us, with that background and with that foundation under us, so that we don't go off into a phobia here, we need to understand the Hebrew writer says, we need to be afraid. Because there is a possibility here. And he explains that. He says, let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into His rest. He says, okay, there's this promise that God has given that we can enter into His rest, which sounds like a good thing. That's not what we're afraid of. But he says, let us therefore fear, lest any of you seem to come short of it. That's what we need to be afraid of. We need to be afraid of falling short of heaven. Now, that fear shouldn't be the only factor driving us. But it is a valid emotion that we need to experience. You see, one of the biggest problems in our society today is nobody has any fear. At least not of the right things. Oh, they may be suffering from all of these 8 pages of fears, but they're not fearing God. And they're not afraid that they're going to miss heaven. I mean, just look at the movies. Just look at the popular literature. Just listen to people talk. They think everybody's going to get to go to heaven. They've taken polls. Oprah Winfrey's going to heaven. Michael Jordan's going to heaven because he can play basketball. You know, you go on down, they polled about all the famous people. And the majority of the people in our country thought those people were going to heaven. Why? Because, you know, Oprah's going to heaven because she has a talk show? Michael Jordan's going to heaven because he can play basketball? You know, why? What have they done in order to establish their position as someone who gets to go to heaven? And you ask people, just ask people, well, what does somebody have to do to go to heaven? Oh, you get a variety of different answers. But they all basically boil down to, well, as long as you're a good person, you'll get to go to heaven. They've been watching too many Hollywood movies. Or, well, if you do good things for other people, if you sacrifice for other people, you know, that's the common theme in Hollywood movies. Somebody may have been the dirtiest, rottenest scoundrel there ever was, but they pushed somebody out from in front of a bus right before they died. And so, voila, they get to go to heaven. Is that really all there is to it? Is that the way it works? No, we know if we study the Bible that that's not the way it works. That instead, God has a plan, and we have to follow His plan. Peter says, if the righteous scarcely be saved, what shall be the outcome or the result? What's going to happen to those who are ungodly and sinners? We need to understand that you're not just going to accidentally slip over into heaven and then wonder, wow, how did I get here? It doesn't work that way. He tells us we need to fear lest we come short of it. He tells us in verse 2, for unto us the gospel preached as well as unto them. Who's the them? Well, he's just talked about the unbelief of the children of Israel in the wilderness. He spent chapter 3 talking about that. They didn't believe. They didn't have the fear of God in them. And I hear people say to her, "Oh, your son, he fears God." Well, does he fear God with a rational kind of fear that's going to drive him to do those things that will please God? Or is he just scared stupid, so to speak, scared senseless, so afraid that he won't do anything to make the situation better? Because that kind of fear isn't a good kind of fear. Notice what he says. The gospel was preached unto us as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. So he tells us the first thing, just hearing the gospel preached isn't enough. You've got to have faith when you hear the gospel preached. You see, he talks about this group of people who lost out. Their bodies fell in the wilderness. The King James says their carcasses fell in the wilderness. They died, never getting to the promised land. Why didn't they get to the promised land? Because they didn't have faith. We could be in the same boat. We could work all of our lives doing all of the good deeds we can come up with, but if we don't have true faith in God, we won't enter in. You see, faith is believing enough to do. I asked the boys about a month ago, I guess it was, in class, how many of you believe, we were talking about faith, and so I gave them an illustration, how many of you believe that if you were standing here and I was standing behind you, how many of you would have enough faith in me to catch you that you'd fall backwards and let me catch you? A couple of them right away said, "Oh, no, I don't trust you that much." Two of them said, "Yeah, I believe you'd catch me." I'm not going to name the names. You can ask afterwards. They may tell you. So I got the first one. I said, "Okay, get up here and let's do it then." "Well, wait a minute. I thought you said you believed that I'd catch you, but you're not willing to show it." See, that's what James said. You say you have faith. You show me your faith without works. I'll show you my faith by my works. That's what's going to show it. You can't just say it. Saying I believe in God doesn't mean you believe in God. So he gets up there and he starts to fall back. And he stopped himself, put his foot back to catch himself because he didn't really trust that I was going to catch him. The second one got up there and fell. And he fell. And he fell. And he thought he was going to hit the floor. But I caught him just before he did. Because I promised him I would. You see, so many of us say we believe in God, but then when God tells us something, we say, "Hold on, let me catch myself. I don't trust God's going to catch me." Real faith in God means we trust Him implicitly. We know He's going to do what He said do, and we don't question it, and we don't doubt it. Now that doesn't mean that never a seed of doubt enters our mind. But Satan's going to tempt us with doubt. That's one of the things that Satan uses in his arsenal of weapons that he has. Doubt is going to enter in from time to time. When that doubt enters in, we have to remind the devil to get behind us. You don't belong there. We have several Bible examples of people who feared God and believed in Him enough that they did what they were supposed to do. You look at Moses' faith when he was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. He had faith. He had to believe in God. He feared God more than he feared Pharaoh because he knew Pharaoh could kill him. But he still went face to face and toe to toe with Pharaoh to tell him what God had to say about it. He believed. We need to believe. We need to see the great works that God has done and fear Him and believe Him and worship Him because of it. There were so many cases in the Old Testament of people who feared God, and because they feared God more than they feared man, they came out on the right side of the conflict. Even though some of them had to suffer through flames of fire or lion's dens, they still came out the better for their faith in God. But you know, some of those people who had faith in God still suffered and were killed. And we need not think that they didn't have as much faith in God just because they were suffered and were killed. When we think about James in the New Testament, we think about Stephen in the New Testament. They feared God more than they feared man. But God didn't spare them that martyr's death. We've got to learn to fear God more than man. Sometimes we think that any fear is a sign of weakness, but that's not the case. Jesus says in Luke chapter 12 and verse 5, I will forewarn you whom you shall fear. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. Jesus just finished telling them, you know, don't be afraid of man, because the worst thing man can do to you is kill you. But you better fear God, because he can kill you. He sure killed a bunch of folks that were disobedient to him, didn't he? All those people in Israel, 600,000 men of fighting age, their carcasses fell in the wilderness. Ananias and Sapphira, dead on the spot for lying to God. Yes, fear him. Because not only does he have that power to kill the body, but he has a place for that soul that's an eternal death. Suffering for eternity. Yes, we should fear him. Jesus warned us who we should fear. You know, it's interesting, even after Jesus' resurrection, it says of those that came to the tomb in Matthew 28:8, they departed quickly from the sepulchre with fear and great joy. You know, sometimes all these emotions get mixed up in us, and we think, I don't know what I'm really feeling, because I'm so confused. Can you imagine? They were afraid because they had seen these angels. They were afraid because the body of Jesus was gone. And yet they had some joy as well, because the angels had said, he's alive. So they were having all these mixed emotions. They were just getting used to the idea of him being dead, and now suddenly he's alive. See, all these confused emotions. And we're going to have that as well. We're going to face that turmoil emotionally. And when we do, we need to be sure that we have the fear in the right place and that we have the control over it. We all face frightening situations, but how do we handle those situations? In 1 Corinthians 2:3, Paul himself speaks of how he was with the Corinthians. He says, and I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And yet despite those feelings, the trembling and the fear and the weakness, he still did what he had to do, and he still taught what he had to teach. He still practiced what he needed to practice. Even though he had the fear, you see, he overcame that fear because his fear of God, of his obligation to God, was greater than the other fears that he faced. We mentioned in Acts 5, Ananias, when he heard these words, fell down dead and gave up the ghost. And great fear came on all them that heard these things. And again in verse 11, and great fear came upon all the church and upon as many as heard these things. It wasn't a bad thing. Sometimes I hear and think myself occasionally that, you know, maybe if another Ananias and Sapphira were struck down, maybe then the fear would enter the church again, and we'd be afraid of the things we ought to be afraid of. Then maybe we'd realize that God is not someone to play around with, and that playing church just doesn't work. Certainly set them going in the first century, didn't it? The fear swept over the whole church. We need to listen to God. We need to fear God. One of the worst things that is said in the Bible about any group of people, and it's really kind of odd because, as we said, so many times when people are afraid, they're comforted by the angels or by Jesus, or God tells them, don't be afraid. And yet, one of the worst things that's said about any group of people in the Bible is that they were without fear. So, kind of confusing. Well, all this, don't be afraid, and yet, then one of the worst things that can be said of you is you don't have any fear. Yeah. Because they don't have the right fear. Again, it goes back to the idea of a good fear and a bad fear. But we need to have this good fear. We need to be afraid. We need to be very afraid. But we don't need to be afraid to the point of a phobia. Romans chapter 3. Beginning in verse 10, it says, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understands. There is none that seeks after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that does good. No, not one. Their throat is an open sepulchre. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. There is, and the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. You see, we're living in a society like that again, just like the first century, where these people aren't afraid of God. Yeah, I'm not afraid of anything. That's one of the worst statements that can be made about somebody, is that they're not afraid of anything. First Peter 2 and verse 17, Peter says that we are to honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the ruler, the king, he says. Of course, we don't have a king, but we honor whoever's in authority over us. Notice, we don't fear man. We don't fear the brotherhood. We don't fear the king. But we are to fear God. That's what he tells us. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28, the Hebrew writer says, wherefore we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and godly fear. Now think about that for a minute. What the Hebrew writer has said is, we cannot acceptably serve God unless we have godly fear, unless we have reverence. Let us serve Him acceptably with reverence and godly fear. We need reverence and godly fear in order to serve Him appropriately and acceptably. Let's think about that for a minute. Most of us do most of the things that the Bible teaches. We don't kill. We haven't stolen. We don't commit adultery. We say, oh, you know, we don't do it. We're going to do all those bad things. But occasionally we slip up with one thing or another. But we say, well, you know, I'm not doing all those bad things. But one of the things that we've got to understand, we absolutely, positively must understand, if God gives us four commands, and we follow three of those commands because we like those commands anyway, and it was something we were going to do anyway, and we disobey the fourth command, we might as well have disobeyed all four of them. Because the only reason we did the first three is because we wanted to. We don't understand that so many times. We think, well, I obeyed him 9 times out of 10. That's 90%. I'm doing the best I can do because I obeyed him 90% of the time. But the fact of the matter is, if we really fear God, we're going to do everything we can to obey Him 100% of the time. See, this is the problem that the religious world has. They say, well, we believe in God, we believe in Jesus, we believe in the Bible, so what difference does it make if we do this or that? Well, see, we don't really believe if we don't really obey. Use the example before of a father who sends his son out to plant four fields, and he says, in this field plant wheat, in this field plant corn, and that one over there plant rice, and in that one over there plant some soybeans. And the son goes out, yeah, this is a good place to plant wheat, so he plants wheat there. Oh, this is a good place to plant corn, so I'll plant corn there. It's been awful dry, and rice takes an awful lot of water. You know what? I'm going to plant some cotton over here instead. And yeah, I'll plant soybeans there. And his father's upset at him, and he said, well, what? I obeyed you 3 out of the 4 things. No, you didn't. You didn't obey me at all. The only reason you did those 3 things was because you thought that was the thing to do. You see, when we start deciding what to do instead of doing what God has decided we should do, it doesn't matter if we break one commandment or all of the commandments that He's given us. We're just as guilty because our attitude is wrong. We need to have some fear in our lives. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 20. Paul tells Timothy, them that sin, rebuke before all. In other words, Paul tells Timothy, if somebody sins, you rebuke them in public. We don't see that happen very often anymore, do we? Why? So that others may fear. Paul says we need some fear in the church. When somebody's in sin, rebuke them publicly. Now, we're not talking about somebody who slipped up on something and you know, they were trying to do what was right, but they got deceived, they got drawn away by their lust, and they sinned, and we go to them and they feel bad about it and they repent. That's not the ones that Paul's talking to Timothy about. He's talking about those people who are committing public sins or are committing rebellious sins where their attitude's not right, where they say, I'm going to do what I want to do. Those are the ones that you rebuke them in public, in front of everybody, so that others will learn that they can't get away with that. And isn't that exactly what Paul did with the man in Corinth? You want to talk about public? That guy's been dead for 1900 years, and people are still talking about his sin. And what Paul told the church to do to him because of his sin. Guy's been dead for almost 2 millennia. And people are still learning from his sin and seeing his sin taught about. That's public. You can't get much more public than that. But we need to think about how important fear is. You see, again, we said one of the worst things that can be said about a group of people is that they have no fear. In the book of Jude, short little one-chapter book down there before Revelation that we almost never study. Maybe we ought to study that one. Let's study that another night. But in Jude chapter 1, he talks about a group of people who is going the wrong way. He says they have gone in the way of Cain. Remember, Cain was the first murderer. They ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward. So they're covetous and greedy and murderers. And perished in the gainsaying of Kor. So he says they're like those rebels. You remember Brother Red taught about Korah and his group during one of the nights of the gospel meeting. They're rebellious like those folks, standing up against authority, not accepting what... So here's this group of people. He says these were people that were in the church there. Because notice what he says. These are spots in your feasts of charity. When they feast with you. See, he's talking about, because they were having a fellowship meal together. And these people who were like Cain and like Balaam and like Korah were feasting with them. They were having fellowship with them. And notice what he says. Feeding themselves without fear. See, he's telling them, they need to have some fear. They should be afraid to come in the midst of the church and socialize and fellowship and eat a meal with the church when they're living like that. Does that strike close to home to anybody? It should if you're living like that. You can't put on that hypocrite's mask and come into the church and act like everything's okay. If there's sin in your life, you get sin out of your life. You need to have some fear. Be afraid. Because God can cast body and soul into hell. Jude 1, verse 23, also. Verse 22, he says, and of some have compassion, making a difference. An indication here is that you can save some people with compassion. And we talked about the different motivators. Different people are motivated by different things. Some people are motivated by reward. Some people, boy, you know, just the thought of heaven being up there and how wonderful it's going to be motivates them. Some people are motivated by fear. Just the thought of hell and it being there motivates them. Some people are motivated by love. Some people are motivated by power. Some people are motivated by greed. Now, there are a lot of different motivations in the world. Some people are motivated by popularity. But some people can be motivated by compassion. And he says, so, though some have compassion and make a difference. Verse 23 says, and others save with fear. There are some people that need to be saved with fear. We need to put the fear of God into them. Because there's nothing else that'll work on them. Notice what he says. Pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. Sometimes people just need to be scared straight. And if that's the case with you, I hope you're afraid. You better be. Because if you're not, one day you will be. It's better to fear God now than to fear Him then. Because then it'll be too late. Now you have the opportunity to turn things around. Maybe you do fear God. If so, continue to fear God. Don't allow the touchy-feely, happy, everybody gets to go to heaven and everything will be all right in the end atmosphere that's permeating our society to infect you. Remember, you don't have to dwell on it every day, all day. That would make you miserable. But don't forget that there is a hell. And there will be people suffering there. And you don't want to be one of them. If you have any doubt, go home tonight and light a candle and stick your finger in that flame for a minute. Stick your finger in that flame for 5 seconds. You don't want to be part of that for eternity. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps you need to get yourself out of the threat of those flames. There's no better time than tonight. No better opportunity than now. If you have a need to respond, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.